And we're live.
Hey, this is Stephanie from Color Me In Podcast, in which I bring in musicians to talk about 10 or so pieces of work that have influenced them. Who do we have in today?
My name is Campbell Young. And this is...
I'm Jackson Fritz.
What do you guys do?
Music.
What projects?
I'm in a band called...
You're in a many bands.
I'm in a lot. I do band things. Mostly, I'm in two bands. One called The Lunar Laugh with my buddies Jared Lee Kites, Connor Anderson, and Jimmy Jackson. And then another one with... that's called Don't Tell Dina with my roommates and another guy. And then I play a lot of other shows.
You have solo stuff, too.
That doesn't exist.
Okay, never mind.
Oh, yes, it does.
Heavy breathing.
Well, I'm doing a solo project right now called Chameleon Factory. And I guess the only other project I've really done is Juggernaut. And that was kind of a stoner doom hardcore punk project I did with my friend Cody and my friend Zach. And then Yano stepped in on drums. And then the other stuff I do by myself is just post-punk and ambient and electronic, and then any other influence that goes in there.
Yeah. Do you guys just want to dive in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Do you want to go first?
Well, let's get my 15 out of the way.
So, Campbell has 15.
Yeah, breaking the rules on episode one.
That's okay.
Okay.
There are very loose rules.
Yeah. Cool. So we're gonna, these are in no particular order. These are all just albums that I think are amazing. And if you haven't heard them, go hear them. And that's all I'll say about that. So number one, we got Revolver by the Beatles. In my opinion, I think it's the best Beatles album. Simply because you have the perfect mixture of the Beatles just delivering a product and them experimenting in the studio. Whereas with things like Sgt. Pepper's, you have just a lot of constant experimentation. We're going to act like I didn't cut that out. So they had just a bunch of constant experimentation and kind of whatever they threw in, wanted to throw in, they would throw in. So... yeah, that's Revolver.
John Lennon's spirit's in the pot.
Yeah, John Lennon's here with us.
Very pretentious spirit.
Man.
That's interesting because I know a lot of people whose favorite Beatles album is the White Album.
The White Album to me is a lot like Led Zeppelin's album Presence in that it's a band at the top of their game, just experimenting in the studio. Not all of it works, but... it's great to hear the process. For me, Revolver's my favorite because you have just 11 amazing songs on there.
So. Tomorrow Never Knows is such a good song.
Yeah.
And then I really like Taxman. Taxman is one of my favorite guitar solos and also one of my favorite Paul McCartney bass lines.
Yeah, well, and Paul McCartney played the solo on it too.
Oh, the...
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, I had heard about that at some point, because couldn't George not, get it nailed down the exact way?
Well, I think it was just that, I don't know if George couldn't nail it or whatever, I think it was just that Paul just happened to play it, and then, they were like, oh, that's cool, let's keep that.
That's awesome.
So do you think that album influenced you songwriting-wise, or just sonically, or just...
I would say that it's good albums
that you listen to, feel-good albums.
Well, I mean, it is one of my just feel-good albums, but I also kind of use it to model, the way that I like to make albums, where it's, you have both experimentation and quickly making a product, because I don't like spending too much time on one thing. I like going in and, okay, we have 4 days, we're going to make an album, and that's it. We're not going to fret about the details. We're going to do a little bit of experimenting, but that's it.
Very punk.
Yeah. Which leads me to album two.
All right. Segue.
Speaking of punk, Never Mind the Bollocks, the Sex Pistols. it's like the one
of the only person I know whose favorite album or like in the list would be that. That's interesting.
Well, my thing is just because like I was trying to think of every, you know, Clash album that I listened to, and like the of the classic punk albums that I love, which I love most of them, especially Raw Power, which really started it all. But Never Mind the Bollocks is one of those where I go back and I can listen to every song and it still feels the same as like the first day I listened to it.
Nice.
Like it's for me, like, cause it's not something that is played, you know, on the radio much, you know? So it still feels pretty fresh rather than, you know, everything that I hear on the radio and stuff like that.
To me, it's like, I'm not in love with it, but I understand its importance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, and that's my thing, like, because I definitely wouldn't say that, like, it's every day, that's my favorite punk album. But, like, I knew on this list that I needed a punk album because that was...
Your punk.
And that was, like, high school for me. Like, I listened to way too much punk in high school, so... I just needed something on there, and I was like, what encapsulates all of it, this one album? Because, I mean, they only made one album. They were like, hey, we made an album, here you go, this is it, that's all we're doing. We're breaking up, Sid Vicious is dying, he killed Nancy, maybe he didn't, we don't know.
He can't play bass. I shouldn't say that. This is coming from an incompetent musician.
Jackson plays bass, by the way.
And it's so epic.
Edgy.
Yeah. But no, so like I was between that one and the Clash's first record.
That's a good choice.
Cause I feel like once you start getting to like London Calling and Combat Rock, it's not really punk as much as it is everything else.
That's kind of like where a lot of their fan base got divided.
Yeah.
As far as what I know, because I know this is, you know, like they have like reggae, of course, you know, Guns of Brixton, and then they have stuff like Rudy Campbell,
yeah,
you know, some kind of poppy songs, you know, and they always did have good pop sensibilities in their hooks and what,
yeah,
and everything else. And Joe Strummer is an excellent songwriter.
Oh, he's amazing. And like when you have a bunch of people like the Sex Pistols, it's literally just like they're not musicians, they're not good at what they do, it's just a fucking
and they're assholes.
Yeah. They're assholes. It's just a visceral experience. Here's 45 minutes.
And then God Bless Pill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that on your list? Okay, cool. Yeah, I figured. It would be on my list too. Absolutely.
And then from punk, we're going to go to funk.
The Unks.
Yep. We're starting off with
the Unks family.
So from there, we've got, how many funk albums do I have on here? Or that could be described as funk. One, two, three, four.
Wow.
So
I didn't know you liked funk. Who doesn't like funk?
Yeah, it's one of those things I've gotten into over the past couple of years, but it's kind of the backbone of what Don't Tell Dina as a Band is. Mm-hmm.
You're like synth funk,
kind of.
They remind me of Duran Duran on a few songs.
Yeah, it's really the way I describe, especially the newer stuff that we're working on. It's like if you took "Give It to Me, Baby" by Rick James, and made a psychedelic rock band from Oklahoma play it.
That's awesome.
So. I think I'm just going to go in chronological order on these four. We're going to start with Cosmic Slop by Funkadelic.
Ooh.
Okay.
I knew I wanted both a Parliament and a Funkadelic album on here just because it's two different types of funk. But yeah, Cosmic Slop, it was between this and Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow. But I mean, you've got so many good songs on Cosmic Slop.
I feel like that's a Tattoo Jackson and I would get tattooed.
Is that the one with the weird, like, hooded figure and it's, like, green? Or am I thinking of another one?
I think that's, like, one or two after it. Cosmic Slop is the one where it kind of looks like a weird, like, Naked Buddha Lady. It's strange.
Maybe that's what it is. There's like some green zombie figure on one of their album covers.
It's this one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was thinking of something different. I need to listen to more Funkadelic because I've heard, like, you know, All of MAGA Brain. That's a classic.
Yeah. Well, and like...
And a few of their other songs.
My thing with Funkadelic is like, it's really just a psychedelic rock band. Like, they have funk sensibilities, but it's mostly psych rock.
It's like psych rock with a little bit of that James Brown DNA, because Bootsy played for
Mr. Brown. But I mean, Eddie Hazel, like, he was basically Hendrix.
I'm sorry. This is in the same discussion, but Super Stupid is one of the coolest songs I think they've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just that intro and just the solo. You know, and of course, you can't forget MAGA Brain and then like Hit It and Quit It or Can't We Get to That, you know. You've Got a Thing, stuff like that. Man, they had great pop sensibilities, but they're also really like, you know, stretching the limit with their fan base and their, you know, like being weird as hell.
Well, and like dressing like with, up and like everything. With Parliament, you had like, that was really where they were making their hits. I mean, like that was like the straight up funk stuff. And then like, Funkadelic was where their use of LSD really kicked in.
Good Mike Judge documentary about that stuff, by the way.
Dude, yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Awesome. Because of all people, why Mike Judge?
A Southern Texan guy talks about Bootsy Collins and James Brown, and it's hilarious.
It's such a great, if you haven't seen it, we're talking about, it's called Tales from the Tour. It was on Stars or one of the HBO, one of those networks.
Animated retellings with interviews from like Bootsy Collins, Waylon Jennings.
So the first season is all about country singers. Yeah. The second season is all about funk.
I love that because he's going all different directions.
Well, that's cool. And all the entire series, some dude put it on YouTube as a series of like 2-minute videos.
Yeah. So you're just going like one after another in a playlist.
And you're like, oh, I could just watch a few of these, hear some cool funk stories, and then by the end of it, you're like, oh, I've watched 3 episodes of this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. It really is. It's fantastic. So,
on from Funkadelic, we're going to Parliament, Mothership Connection. Another one of those where, like, I could have chosen a multitude of albums. I thought about choosing a Greatest Hits album for this, but I was like, no, let's go to the one that kind of made them big. Because, I mean, you got We Want the Funk, you got Make My Funk the P-Funk.
I really like that one.
Yeah, you've got Mothership Connection, and then
some homework to do.
Well, and then
there's so much funk. It's great.
Well, and there's just so much Parliament Funkadelic because George Clinton literally had, like, I was looking it up because I was like, I wonder if I could listen to every single like P-Funk album that they made. But you've got, I mean, everyone's solo projects in there. So Eddie Hazel, Bootsy, Bernie Worrell, George Clinton.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know Bernie Worrell was with Funkadelic.
Yeah.
No, I guess I did. I know him mainly from Talking Heads, because that's the first time I saw him play in that
Stops Me. Stop Making Sense. Yeah. But, yeah, so you've got all their solo albums. You've got Brides of Funkenstein, which is a side project. And then, like, 5 or 6 other side projects. And each of them all released, like, 6 to 10 albums. Like, it's ridiculous how much work he was able to come up with.
Yeah, they're all really good musicians.
Yeah, super solid. And I mean, they had that Mothership tour right after that where they literally landed a spaceship on stage in the 70s.
And then they had like a giant sky. There's a good video, and they start the show off, or the song off at least, with like this giant skeleton, and it's smoking a joint, and all this smoke comes out of its mouth. And it has like glowing eyes. Super cheesy, but I love it.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone could pull that off, it'd be them.
So that's like the way Rick James used to start his shows. He would start off with like one of their hits just to kind of get the crowd like up and going. And then they would almost go into this like military march song. And they would bring out these 2 giant joints on stage as just like stage props.
Yeah.
And they would start singing the song, "We Love Mary Jane."
Oh, yeah. I saw a part of that. Yeah. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, they actually like would do that on stage. Ridiculous. So that
sounds fun.
So that transitions into the next one, produced by Mr. Rick James, is Eddie Murphy's "How Could It Be?"
Is that the one with
"Party All the Time"?
Party all the time.
Listen, where would we all be without "Party All the Time" by Eddie Murphy?
Wait, not Eddie, laughing my
Eddie
ass
Murphy's
off.
The comedian and actor.
Yes.
I didn't know he had music.
He made a cute pop single with Rick James at the producing.
Yeah.
Producing it.
No, so the story goes that
this guy's Rick, a gem.
Yeah. Really a triple threat.
Watch out, boys.
And then you made Dr. Doolittle.
Okay, that's a classic.
Yeah, the original Dr. Doolittle was a classic. No, so the story goes with this album that Rick James was just hanging out with Eddie Murphy. This was back in like his Saturday Night Live days. Mm. And they were just hanging out at Rick's studio and they got snowed in. So they decided they were just going to kind of work on some music or whatever. And they got a whole album out of it. And "Party All the Time" was like a big hit, like considering that it's an actor.
Yeah. Well, I've seen the video. It's actually a really catchy song too.
Yeah. And like, well, and what I didn't realize, because I had always just heard the version that's on, you know, iTunes and Spotify, the 12-inch single version on vinyl actually has, like, a guitar solo.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wonder who was doing the guitar.
I know.
Probably some great, like, session musician or something.
Yeah. Fuck. I'm just now remembering that I didn't put any Bowie on here. Shit.
Think fast.
Yeah, think fast.
Okay, honorable mention to "Let's Dance" because what reminded me of that was when I.
That's your favorite Bowie album?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Oh
He's
yeah.
He's got the hot take.
Okay, I guess that makes sense with you because you're like especially your solos though.
Well, and
because that's like not one of my favorite Bowie albums, but I like it was one of his bigger commercial hits.
That album was made in 4 days. That's the thing you got to think about.
It's true.
That album was made and mixed and like sent off in 4 days.
He had great musicians on it too.
Yeah,
so.
Like, you had
Nile Rodgers and
Nile Rodgers, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah.
Like, and with that album, you could tell it was just Bowie like having fun with Nile Rodgers producing.
Oh yeah.
Man, I love. I actually have not like I've heard a few Bowie albums, but I haven't heard "Let's Dance" all the way through. That's the one with the boxing gloves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The single "Let's Dance" on its own is so good. That's one of the first Bowie songs I heard.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
I think I have a hard time loving Bowie's 80s stuff as much as everyone else does, just because, like, it is so 80s that it sounds like everything going on in the 80s, but...
But it came out in 82 when the 80s wasn't quite the 80s.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is, like, I went backwards.
Yeah.
So it doesn't affect me as much as, like, if it had come out at 82, it probably would have been one of my favorites.
Yeah. Well...
But, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
What I look at is... I like to think of things like chronologically and how things influenced other things.
Right.
So, like, I always pay attention to years and, like, kind of what stuff happens. So, like, 84 is when music started really getting cheesy in the 80s. Yeah. And, like, that's when you had a lot of the one-hit wonders that record labels would hear, oh, they've got a hit, let's sign them, and then really fuck them over.
And then all the prog bands from the 70s were just, like, getting really, really produced and really, not that they weren't to begin with, but very synth-heavy, like Rush and then Styx and Pink Floyd. And
I think even, when did Yes, Whenever Lonely Heart come out? Because that's like...
83?
Maybe? Yeah, that probably sounds right.
Which is the most, that's like Yes like, song, but it's like the first one everyone hears, and then they hear like Close to the Edge or Fragile, and they're like, oh, wow. That's
Nathan was like,
band.
It hurts my heart that everyone knows Yes by that song.
It's a great pop song on its own.
See, I don't really like it. Like, I had to play it, and I was like, yeah.
Well, I'll take it over a lot of stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, my thing is...
At the school, that is.
It's one of those things, like... it's one of those...
I have a right. I'm an ACM veteran. Sorry.
But no, like... Owner of a Lonely Heart's one of those things, like, I'm blanking on the, Momentary Lapse of Reason, where it's like, wow, you guys have really fallen.
I like some stuff off the Division Bell, but that's another story.
But the Division Bell, my thing, a lot of people hate me for hating the Division Bell.
The Division Bell.
The Division Bell. But, like, people don't like me for not liking the Division Bell, but my thing is, like, Pink Floyd as a band has always kind of one-upped themselves with every album.
Yeah, yeah.
Even with Momentary Lapse of Reason, like, it was a step forward for them, but, like, Division Bell, it was such a step back that, like, yeah, it sounded like classic Pink Floyd, but it's like...
It's kind of like you go to your favorite restaurant, and you're like, all right, I'll take the filet mignon. You kind of bite into it, and you're like, it's good, but it's not... as best as it was last time.
Yeah. Yeah. But no. And
what's your favorite restaurant, Jackson?
Oh, hell. I'll name several. Los Artesanos, Cajun King.
Cajun King.
Cajun King's amazing.
Dude, Cajun King is amazing. So I haven't eaten Cajun King since high school.
Oh, it's so good. Soul food.
I need to go back to Cajun King.
But it's good. It's good. No, I usually don't like buffets, but this is a special
cross my favorite.
It's owned by real Cajun people, too.
It really is.
Yeah, they have those. Because
I can't understand a damn word they say in there.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
Before we got off topic, we'll go back to Pink Floyd.
Do they have those? What are they called? The
Po-boys? No, they don't have Po-boys, but they have. No, I don't want to go into it. I know their whole menu.
I will say, Cajun King has the best damn catfish ever.
Everywhere
I've had
catfish, I'll have to
everywhere I've had catfish from, it's all tasted like dirt because catfish are dirt fish.
They're cute,
but
though.
If you like them so much, you should marry them.
They have big lips. Go on, sorry.
Anyway, Cajun King, the catfish doesn't taste like dirt. You heard it here first, folks.
Well, there's Lenny's by, I think it's like Noble Purcell. It's like down in
Norman. South Norman. I haven't been there.
They have good catfish. It's kind of bland, but it doesn't taste like dirt.
Okay, well, that's something. I'll have to check that out. I'll look into that.
Their tartar sauce is pretty good.
Anyway, before we got off on this weird tangent about catfish... we were talking about Pink Floyd, for those of you just now tuning in. So my favorite Pink Floyd album, which happens to be on this list, is Animals.
Dark Side of the Moon.
Fuck Dark Side. We're going with Animals. Animals is the best.
You can keep it.
Well, this is where we get to discuss how great Animals is.
Okay.
Because, God damn it. What a fucking good album. Like... There's not a whole lot to say about it other than just that that's them. I think that's the peak of Pink Floyd, is that they peaked there and then the wall went downhill a little bit. It was just a little too grandiose and ambitious.
Yeah, I'd agree. And the wall has still got some really great stuff to offer, but I feel like part of the songwriting elements went up and a few of the compositions are complacent or filler.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of filler because, I mean, it is a double album and you have so many things that are, you know, transitioning from one thing to another.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to ever listen to, you know, just part three of Another Brick in the Wall. Like, no one's going to listen to...
Or, like, Stop or...
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some...
I wanna go home!
Yeah.
Peaks at home.
Yeah, I mean, we've been peaking a little bit.
Sorry
this whole
about
time.
That.
It's okay.
Loud boys.
We're just a couple of loud boys. But did you guys ever see that meme where it was when that like bands being portrayed by SpongeBob scenes or like albums being portrayed by SpongeBob scenes?
Have you seen the Bowie one?
What's the Bowie one?
Oh my God, let me pull it up. Have you seen the Nine Inch Nails one?
I have seen the Nine Inch Nails.
Okay, that one was really good.
Have you seen the the Pink Floyd one? The Pink Floyd one is just SpongeBob saying, "Squidward's dad never loved him."
Oh.
Isn't that sad?
That's so funny.
That's pretty accurate. Around the...
Let me find it.
Wall era. Or wall and Final Cut.
The Black Star one hurts just to look at
it. Oh, wait. So it's the whole... Yes, oh, I have seen this. Where it's every single Bowie album.
Yeah. And it's like the episode with... I can't remember what happens in this episode, but they have a coffin open. And it's like Black Star. And I'm like, ouch.
My favorite thing about Animals is just there are a lot of solos and parts that drag on, but they don't, like, they drag, but they're good.
Well, and it never fatigues you.
That
there's one little synth line which could have ended the song in Sheep, where it goes the doo.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like, okay, this could be the end of the song, but they keep going, and it works. Like,
and the production and, like, effects.
It works so well.
It's probably the most... I feel like it's the most ambitious production-wise, because there's that part where Roger Waters' vocals literally transition into Richard Wright's synth.
Yeah.
As far as I know. And there's also... I know it's David Gilmour on the album playing the bass, but you got, like, the opening bass line to Pigs, Three Different Ones. And at the end of Pigs, Three Different Ones, I think that's Gilmour's best solo ever.
That's when he's really just, like, digging in.
And there's some really dissonant notes in there, too, that work so well.
Well, and I love that. I almost wish that song was longer, because, like, they faded out at a point where you're like, they definitely were playing for, like, 10 more minutes in the studio.
Yeah, because he's like, it's one of the first times I've heard him, like, shred. And I usually don't like, but he does it so well in that part.
Well, and he plays it to the song, and Roger Waters, I don't know if it's Roger Waters actually playing bass on that part, but
they're doing the octaves.
Like, it just worked. And I'm like, why did you only play that little bit for, like, 45 seconds? You could have played that for at least 2 minutes and I would have been happy. Like,
I feel like that's, like... And another thing is, like, the soloing on Dogs. That's also some of David's best work. Because it's, like... It's just, like...
I think we should have a cover album of just Campbell doing Pink Floyd with his...
With my mouth.
I want to do the bass on Sheep.
I actually...
No, you have to do it with your voice.
No. Well, no one wants to hear me sing. With a strange strumming pattern.
Hey, you White House!
Roger is so whiny.
You fucked up old hag!
Oof, Roger Waters. Stephanie? Okay. That might be a dumb question, but you've heard a lot of music.
Yeah, I've listened to Pink Floyd, but I never, like... dove into them, so it was like very surface level. So
that was me. That was me before I saw Roger Waters live, and then I was like, "Hold on, what?"
It was like right around the time I discovered like the Banshees and the Cure and stuff. So like that stuff was more interesting to me.
Yeah.
And so I just like never fully.
Damn, I forgot to put a Cure album on here. Okay. Fuck.
Please put a Cure album.
That's gonna be a recurring theme.
I can tell you my favorite Cure album.
Honorable mention to. Disintegration.
No. Oh, that's so basic.
It's basic, but it's fucking good. It's definitely the best it's one of my favorite double albums.
Oh, that's interesting. I like the earlier stuff more than I...
Well...
Like, everyone likes their middle stuff, and, like, it's great, it's fantastic, great pop music, but for me, like, their early stuff, like...
Well, if I were to choose between four-piece Cure and three-piece Cure, it would, like... Four-piece would be Disintegration. Three-piece would be Pornography. What were you going to say?
I don't remember. My favorite Cure album is probably... It's a tie between definitely Pornography and... I always forget the name of the album, but it has Funeral Party on it.
The only one I've listened to all the way through is Three Imaginary Boys. And then I've heard like some of
it. So Robert Smith hates that album. I love it.
Is that the one with the pink background in the refrigerator?
Yeah, it's the fridge.
Yeah. That's got some great stuff on it.
He hates it.
Wonder why.
Makes me sad. So 17 Seconds and Faith are probably my favorite Cure albums, which is like around the same time as Pornography.
Yeah. No, they're, and it's, I mean, it's almost like two different bands, the early stuff and their later stuff. Because, I mean, what a whole tragic story. Lowell Tolhurst fucking got credited on.
He came here, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Nice guy.
I didn't work that day. I'm so excited. LOL
Toll House.
He was a nice guy. But yeah, he was kind of telling the story of like, because during Disintegration, they kind of called it Disintegration because he was battling with alcoholism and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
I think, was that also the same time Robert was like coming clean off of like, I was
I think Coke so. Or heroin? Something. Okay. They're always addicted to drugs.
You're not a real musician if you don't do drugs.
You're not a real musician if you haven't had a few drug binges in your day. Did you ever... If you haven't played Live Aid on Coke, you're not a real musician.
Jackson.
I'm looking at you, Ozzy Osbourne.
I was just listening to Henry Rollins has his own podcast with his manager.
Oh, yeah.
And they did like an Ozzy Osbourne one.
Oh.
Like, well, a Black Sabbath one. But it was really good. I think you'd like it.
Oh, man.
Interesting. I really like...
I think it was, he talked about how every show Ozzy is like, is anyone out there? I'm always afraid no one's going to be there.
Oh, yeah. And I've heard him like, tell like a few different...
Yeah.
I've heard him tell a few stories
You're sold
about...
out. The show's sold out. Correct.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was really humbling.
Yeah, no. I've heard Ozzy's a really just humble guy and everything like that. Man, what a tangent we went on. Fuck, I didn't include any Black Sabbath. Honorable mention to...
On the spot, Black Sabbath.
Oh, man. Probably either Masters of Reality or Volume 4.
Both great choices. Those are both probably my favorites, too.
Yeah. Also, I can't remember which one. It's the first one that they had keyboards on, other than just, like, pianos. Have like, the first one they had synthesizers on.
I can't. Was that Volume 4?
No.
I mean, Wheels of Confusion is, like, such a great opener. It could have been the closer, honestly.
Yeah. I can't. It's going to kill me to remember this.
Was it Sabotage?
No, it's the one after Sabotage.
Never Say Die?
Is that after Sabotage? I didn't think so.
Yeah, the one with the helmet. It's like one of their last, like, albums.
No.
Technical Ecstasy?
Yes. I enjoy that one.
I've never listened to it.
It's pretty good. It's good stuff. It's, you kind of have to, like, subvert your expectations. Just go in with, like, a fresh mind.
Yeah.
Don't think, hey, this is Black Sabbath. They did this, this, and this. So I'm going to compare it to this, this, and this. Say, yes, this is Black Sabbath, but it's kind of like the White Album or something like that, where it's a band at the top of their game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just
nothing
kind of...
Nothing to win, nothing to lose, kind
of. Yeah, like... And, I mean, it was toward the end of the Ozzy era.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that was Pink Floyd. Animals. Went off on a bit of a tangent.
Yeah.
Per the usual. But speaking of...
I feel like that's just our conversations in general.
Yeah.
You get anyone in here, things are going
to... I think, like, the point of this podcast is to just have a conversation with people.
And yeah.
Just, like, something not too heavy to listen to. Just...
So, staying on the path of the 70s, Faust 4 is another one.
Faust
is cool.
So, funny story about Faust. I haven't listened to any of their full albums. I've just kind of listened to it, like, here and there. Which is, like... I know.
Which, that's really weird. Like, I feel like I've never listened to Faust here or there. I've only listened, like, the only times I listen to Faust is when I'm like, okay, time to sit down and listen to a Faust album. Like, it's almost like a frame of mind I have to be in. Like, it's a mood piece. But yeah, Faust 4, the first of a few of these, actually only two. First of two of the, three of these on my list that Derek Brown showed me.
Derek likes Faust?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
cool. That, I mean, I'm not surprised. But,
like, well, I told him. I told him that.
He's really into crowd rock.
Yeah, kind of. Okay. I mean, he has a very eclectic range of what he likes.
Yeah. But, like, crowd rock is, like, his home, right?
No. He really likes.
Someone said.
I mean, he enjoys crowd rock. Like,
I know Scott Booker really likes.
Yeah, I might have Scott. Yeah.
Scott really likes crowd rock and, like, Wire.
I went in and I was like, yeah, I'm kind of starting to, I was like really starting to just like dip my toes into krautrock.
And you just pushed you in the deep end.
Yeah. I mean, well,
that is kind of the deep end. Faust is pretty experimental. Like,
what about swans? I think, what about swans?
Well, swans aren't from Germany.
Yeah, swans.
They're from New York.
Is it krautrock still technically?
No. Krautrock.
I'm sure they have some influences in, like...
Yeah.
But
there's definitely influences, but I think they're considered more post-rock. I'm more talking it from, like, krautrock's, like, golden age.
Gotcha.
Like
Can those, and Noy.
Yeah, and from, like, the late 60s, early 70s kind of stuff. But, yeah, Faust 4, I went into his office, and I was just kind of like... We were talking music or whatever, and he was like... I was like, yeah, I'm kind of starting to get into this thing called krautrock. I don't really know.
You ever heard of it?
No, I'm sorry. I knew he'd heard of it.
I was talking to Nick about it. I was like, yeah, do you listen to like krautrock? And he's like, do I? Pulls out a krautrock book and he's like, have you read this? And I was like, yeah, I've read
it. Do you own this book?
Yeah, and then he like pulls up a Kraftwerk song, like one of the more obscure ones. And he's like, cool. This is my fave.
Awesome. Like,
cool. No, yeah. I feel like it's kind of required to enjoy krautrock if you're in the Libs. I mean, they've made Embryonic and The Terror were both basically krautrock. But no, yeah. So going back, went into Derek's office, told him I was getting into krautrock, and he was basically like, "You know, so have you listened to Faust IV?"
You weep.
Because that's about as loud as I've ever heard Derek Brown talk. Have you ever listened to Faust IV? No, just kidding. I've heard him talk louder than that. But yeah.
I started a cover band called Faust 14.
Faust 14.
Huh?
That's certainly interesting.
But yeah, that's probably the most experimental album on here.
One quick thing I'll say about Faust, this is probably Chase made a really accurate comment. He goes, "Faust sound like they plugged their guitars into toasters."
Oh yeah,
true. Them Butthole Surfers and Resonance sound had that weird guitar tone, like just torturous.
I think he has a really interesting guitar tone.
I need to listen to Big Black more and stuff like that. And what's the other one?
Big Black. Oh,
Shellac, however you say that.
I haven't listened to that project yet.
Big Black's the one where he did the one,
songs
two,
about fucking.
Yeah.
That album.
Well, and he'd open the, start the songs off by saying one, two, fuck you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he has a line that's like, I think I fucked your girlfriend once.
Yeah.
That's so edgy. But I bet the music itself is great.
He's an edgy plumber.
Yeah.
And he plays poker, apparently. Like, mad.
Yeah, he won. He won, like, the poker lottery.
God, he looks like such a son of a bitch.
Steve Albini.
I love Albini.
What an opinionated man. he reminds me a lot of Michael Trepanier that works at ACM. Does he work here anymore?
I don't know who that is.
Who the hell is that? Michael Trepanier. I've probably seen him around.
He's a production teacher. But no, he's probably part of why my brain's so fucked up now, because like, no, because he
was supposed to be.
No, so like, he was the first college professor I ever like took a class from, and we're sitting there, Studio One on syllabus day, and he is telling us about this one time when a student was like, "Hey, I'm not going to make it to class. Yesterday was my birthday, and I got too high, so I'm not going to make it." Yeah, like you don't have to send that to your teacher, dude.
I'd be embarrassed to send it to my
teacher. I'd say, but, and he was like, just pretending to type back, and goes, "I don't give a shit." Which, like, that's kind of the tone of his classes, that, and, like, he just really is super opinionated, but, I mean, 8 times out of 10, his opinion's right.
He's been in the game.
Yeah, like, he knows what he's talking about.
I'm sure I've seen him around.
And he's a smart guy. But, yeah. No, I'm trying to remember how we got... Toasters.
Toasters,
that's how we got. Yeah, no, they would also play, cement mixers and stuff.
Yeah, there's a great video from that Krautrock documentary where they're just beating on cement mixers. And one interesting thing I'll put in here, sorry, I don't mean to trail it off too much.
No,
they don't like the term krautrock, so they made a song called Krautrock, where it's just total mockery of that, but they own it so well.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, really...
That's like most punk bands don't like the term punk being applied to
them. Yeah, that's true, too.
Because it did exist at the time. That's
very true.
But it's almost different with krautrock, because kraut was a slur.
Yeah, basically.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Kraut was a slur. So,
like World War II, right?
Post World War II, after the fall of Nazism. Because, I mean, yeah, if you just tried to kill half the world, if your country's leader tried to kill half the world, we're going to call you a mean name. Sorry, guys. But then, because it was coming out of Germany, they just started calling it Krautrock. Didn't matter whether it was you know, like this end of krautrock and this end of krautrock. Mm-hmm. It was all just krautrock because it was from Germany, made by krauts. So that's mostly why they didn't like it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's the only reason I use that term is because it's like, that's what everyone
knows
it
about. That's the term.
Like, yeah. It's like, it's not the most favorable term, but it's like, that's like, I feel like if I say like, man, I'm sure some people would be like, know something if I said, you know, the old German music scene, like late 60s, like all the postmodern weird crap. Maybe. And then I feel like
experimental, like, it's like, would I rather say experimental music from the late 60s, early 70s from Germany? Cologne. or just call it krautrock.
Before I knew the term krautrock, I would describe it as like this experimental, repetitive, hypnotic music from Germany. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just
basically, and that's most people are like, oh, krautrock, and I was like, oh,
that's what that means.
Yeah. First ones I ever heard associated with that were Tangerine Dream and then Kraftwerk. And then Can. Yeah,
so
I listened to Tangerine Dream.
Oh, the early stuff is really good.
You got to watch Black Mirror Bandersnatch. They got that Tangerine Dream in there.
They do?
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually... have you seen that on Netflix yet?
No, I haven't.
So it's basically like an interactive movie, and there's one scene where...
Oh, Patrick was talking about this
today. So there's one scene where the character's in a record store, and you have the choice between... the Bermuda Triangle by, I can't remember what band, but it's another krautrock album, and Tangerine Dream, and
it's cool.
And whichever one you choose is the score for the rest of the film.
What the hell?
Yeah, wow. It's super cool.
That is cool.
That's really bizarre. It's interesting.
Yeah. What were you talking about?
Like Faust and
stuff. Faust and krautrock. Oh, because you guys were talking about how you had first gotten into krautrock. So the first time I had heard the term krautrock was there was this Flaming Lips side project that was fronted by Steven, and Wayne did like backup stuff on it.
I didn't know
this. Yeah, it's called Electric Worms. They did one album, and it's krautrock. Like they made like a series of videos kind of explaining like, hey, here's a side project. Like, the Flaming Lips is still a thing, so don't freak out. But they were like, one was like called like, what is krautrock? One was like, just different things explaining kind of like what they were doing with this album. And it was basically just like them with like a purple background and that weird like late 60s like video feedback thing where like they'd move their arm and it would have like the tracing behind it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's where I first heard of it was that, and I was like, this is kind of cool, so I kind of dove in deeper. And that's that. So how are we feeling like we should go back on this list? Should we go stay with the 70s, or should we just go to the other albums that Derek Brown showed me?
Whatever you want to do.
Okay, well.
We've got about like an hour left.
Okay, well.
So Jackson have to blaze.
That's all
right. He's only got 10, so I feel, and I've made it through a good chunk of mine. So we're going to split it too. Yeah, we're going to do some of these quickly. So next one, Led Zeppelin 4. Don't need to explain myself on that.
it's a classic album.
Yeah, just a classic album. Every song's great. It was great when I was 10.
You mean Greta Van Fleet 4?
Fuck.
Oh. It made it into the podcast. It's ruined.
Greta Van Fleet. More make me go to Greta Van Sleep.
Greta Van Fleetwood Big Mac.
So yeah, Led Zeppelin 4.
Jackson, how dare you?
Led Zeppelin 4. It was great when I was 10. Even better now that I'm 21. Next, we've got Thriller, another classic album.
That's cool.
I don't know, but I would have never guessed that. I mean, like my old chat.
Go listen to Thriller.
Yeah.
It's Michael Jackson's best album. There's a reason it's the greatest selling album of all time. It's incredible. No more needs to be said. Quincy Jones and Michael Jackson. Let's see. Okay, so we're going to go back to albums that Derek Brown showed me. The first one is the first album he showed me ever, which was Blood Songs by Gil Manteris Party Dream. Gil Manteris Party Dream is basically two guys from Ohio. They're half brothers, and they decided in 2000. Well, they started in 99, lasted till about 2015 when they officially were like no longer a band. And they basically decided, hey, what if we made cool, funny 80s music when it's really not cool to do so? They Blood Songs is their second album. Their first album, Once Triangular, is super hard to find. Like, I think they only made CD copies and sold them at shows, so, like, there's only however many in existence. But occasionally they'll pop up on eBay for $100 or so. Yeah, it's rare. But, like, 2006 was when Blood Songs came out, and that was, like, their peak. And they were touring with GWAR, like...
That's why I know that band. I was like, why do they sound so
familiar? Yeah, they toured with GWAR. But yeah, it's kind of... The craziest thing was that, like, back when I was doing solo music, like, before I even knew about Gilman Terrace Party Dream, I was basically copying them. And I was like, oh, shit, I didn't mean to do this. And then now, like, everything's influenced by the 80s, and I'm like, you guys were just... too early.
I was born in the wrong generation.
Yeah, I still need to hear Gilman Terrell's Party Dreams. You've been telling me about him for quite a while, and I still need to listen to them.
I would consider them the greatest band in the world, especially the greatest live band in the world, because the shit that they did on stage was unreal.
Was it the drunk guy? Well, in his underwear.
Yeah, they basically would.
What?
He showed me something, I think.
Oh, okay.
They would, so like, this in a nutshell is Gilman Terrace Party Dream. There's one song, they had a DVD that they made of like a couple of their live shows, really well shot, everything like that, and kind of really encapsulated how good they were as a live band. That there's one part where the head guy who went by Ultimate Donnie, it was Ultimate Donnie and Gilman Terrace. Ultimate Donnie pulls out a sword, sticks it this way, like toward his mouth, pours his beer down it, and is drinking beer off of this sword, stuffs the sword down his pants, and starts like air humping. And I'm like, this is the greatest band in the universe. Like, nothing will ever top this.
That's edgy.
Yeah, it is. But it sounds fun.
They were edgy before edgy even existed. Like,
jeez.
They were about a decade ahead of their time. Like, crazy. Yeah. So on from that, another album.
That's quite a story.
Yeah. Another album that Derek Brown showed me. Love Is Overtaking Me by Arthur Russell.
Oh, shoot, man. I finally got around to his disco stuff.
His disco stuff's amazing.
Oh, you'd love
it.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Sorry.
I mean... Kanye sampled his disco stuff, like.
Oh.
Yeah.
If Kanye did it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did it on The Life of Pablo back when he was like still okay.
Row.
Yeah. But no, so Love Is Overtaking Me is a little weird because it's not really his style, and it's comprised of demos that that people found. Like on it from his tape machine, and they kind of finished them up. Like it's got James Murphy, Annie Clark.
What?
Yeah, like it's got a lot of people associated with it. They released it in 2005, but I mean these demos are from way back
like
in the day.
Like, is he passed away in 2000, right?
2000 or 99? Well, I can't remember what year. But yeah, he died of AIDS. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so and Love Is Overtaking Me is kind of almost like a folk country album, and it was funny when Derek sent it to me. He sent me a screenshot of the album cover out of the blue and was like, hey, I just, you know, rediscovered this and I think you might like it. And it's Arthur Russell standing in a cornfield with like a straw cowboy hat on. I didn't know who Arthur Russell was at the time.
Is there a song about corn in there?
There is, yeah.
Corn. Sorry.
Yeah, it, I mean, okay. It's something like that. It's that's like, I think, the first song on the album. But there's one particular song. It's called Time Away. And it literally describes, like, the laziness that I go through on, like, a day-to-day basis. Like, there's a lyric that he says in the song where it says, put on my pants even though, or what does he say? Fuck, I can't remember.
Did you say the album was called?
Love Is Overtaking Me. But yeah.
Okay. It's a good title.
He's
so
wearing...
So was this after he passed?
Yes.
Okay. Because I've only heard parts of Calling Out of Context.
That one's good. His other really good one that is World of Echo.
So he passed around 2000. So most of his albums are released after he passed?
Well, not all of those are from those actual years.
Oh,
yeah, that's just whenever I think they got put on there. But yeah, that's all I'll say about that. It's a great album. Listen to it if you like. What else do we have on here? We'll just go through the list. I Get Wet, Andrew WK.
Andrew WK.
Party Hard.
Wait, did you cover his song? Or was that something else?
No.
Okay, sorry. I couldn't remember.
But yeah, Andrew WK, not much needs to be said. A perfect blend of metal and pop. I consider it a perfect album.
Let's look more into that.
Yep. Yeah. It's great. Came out in 2001. Tons of good songs on there. Next we got, I think this might be... Okay, I've got three more. I'll just blaze through two of these, and then one of these I'll explain more. Funeral by Arcade Fire.
That's such a good album.
Yeah, great album. First album that really got me into indie rock.
I think for me too, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the way that I was doing it, I had heard, I don't know if you remember The Head and the Heart when they were a thing.
I never listened to them, but yeah, I know about them.
I was into them back when I was in high school, and I had made like an EP of like folk music, and I was trying to do more like indie rock stuff because they had slightly gone in an indie rock direction. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna try to make stuff like that. That's cool. So I got in contact with a guy at a studio, and I was like, hey, I'd want to make something kind of like indie rock-esque. Sent him like a demo of what I was working on. And he was like, yeah, it kind of sounds like Arcade Fire. And I was like, yeah, that was totally the direction I was going for. Immediately looked up Arcade Fire. And this was when Reflector had like just come out. So
pretty like late in their career.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this was, I discovered Funeral like when Reflector came out. But yeah, so
I like that album. I know a lot of people didn't like that album.
Reflector? Oh, yeah. I love Reflector.
Really? I know so many people who are like, oh.
I mean, it has its misses, for sure. Like,
I think it's great.
I think Super Symmetry is a little long-winded.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of long-winded stuff on there, but when it hits, it hits. Cool, yeah, Funeral, Arcade Fire. Next one, which kind of... It didn't lead me on the 80s-esque path that I went on, but it definitely solidified the fact that I could do it and do it well. Strange Desire by Bleachers.
I've heard of Bleachers, but I don't know if I've heard
of so
it. Jack Antonoff.
Jack Antonoff, yeah, from Fun. And he basically went and made this solo album, and it's really good. I discovered it about a year after it came out. And I was like, wow, this is really fucking good. Like, I need to... Like, if he can do this 80s thing and he's making a living doing it, like, I could surely, you know, make an album or two of this. So, and then the final album.
I can definitely see Bleachers as a giant influence.
Yeah. They're one of the biggest, probably the biggest. I definitely consider them my favorite band. The Soft Bulletin, The Flaming Lips. I was torn between the Soft Bulletin and Clouds Taste Metallic, just because
it's a good name too.
Yeah. But I mean, the Soft Bulletin, like, what an amazing story behind an album, because you have like Cloud States Metallic was a flop. A lot of bands were being cut by Warner Brothers, so they were just trying to stay out of everything. Wayne Coyne decided he wanted to make an album with four CDs that you had to play all at once.
Oh, it's that one. Oh,
no, that's not the Soft Bulletin. That's Zyreka. But
I think you talked about this when we were at Texadelphia.
Possibly. Yeah, we did.
But yeah, so Scott Booker, I guess, convinced Warner Brothers Records that, hey, if you give us one budget to do this weird four-disc album, we'll do that one and the Soft Bulletin on that. And, like, there's stories from all the band members and their engineer where they are, like, done. They leave the studio and they're like, well, this might be the last one. Oh. And it wound up, you know, being their one, personally, what I think is their best album. Pitchfork gave it a 10 out of 10, so... I mean, that's enough for me. I listen to Pitchfork. Jeez. Greta Van Fleet is bad because Pitchfork says so.
That's why.
Oh, yeah. God. Well, that's my 15. What do you got, Jackson?
That was really cool. Actually, 18.
Well, I did three honorable mentions. Technically four if we're counting Cloud States Metallic.
Before going, that was really cool. You got some Arthur Russell, Michael Jackson, yeah. Funkadelic.
I think it shows just how diverse your taste is.
Yeah.
Sex Pistols.
I didn't even get to put any hip-hop in there.
I mean, if we had 50, we could... I'm sure all of us could go...
hip-hop? I love 50 Cent.
I don't know if I've ever listened to 50 Cent, actually.
I haven't listened to 50 Cent in years.
Okay, let me...
I'm going to get slapped for saying that, probably.
Let me look at my phone.
Get shunned.
Actually,
this girl doesn't know what she's not talking about.
Hold on. It's like a YouTube comment.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one I'm going to go with.
Do you remember that YouTube comment I sent you about that punk?
Yeah. It hurts. The worst part is I've seen that video. Is it like.
I don't even remember what punk song it was.
The Spillage, Minutemen.
Okay, yeah. There is. Do you know Minutemen?
Yeah.
So there was like a Minutemen. Bass cover, and it was like a girl who was doing it, and the first comment was like, man, I don't really care what you look like, you're already hot because you're playing Minutemen on bass. And I said to you, Jackson, and I lost it.
You're already hot
because
so you're playing Minutemen on bass. No,
I can't see your face. Whoa. But you're already a babe. And I was like, gosh,
no.
Desperation has a face. It so is a YouTube comment section.
I always reference that all
the time. Oh man, YouTube comments
rough.
What do we got?
Okay. So the first album I'll mention here is, this is one of the albums that changed my life, and I know it did for a lot of other people. It's on a bunch of other people's favorites. I think it's the best rock and roll album of all time. I think it's the best punk album of all time. I mean, it's a game changer. It's Funhouse by the Stooges.
Yeah, there you
go. And it was...
I had a feeling that was going to be on your list.
It's been in my top five for a long time, and when I heard it, I really liked it, but as the years grew and I was in high school, it became like my anthem. Like, I genuinely think, you know, it's either one or two in my top albums, just because it's such a game changer. It's so aggressive. The way it's recorded, it's raw, but it also still sounds good because they did studio, they recorded live in the studio as a band. And the bass lines, like Dave Alexander, rest in peace, because he part of 27 Club, alcohol killed him. His bass lines are so fat and so heavy in the mix. And it's just like, there's distortion and there's the wah-wah and the drumming is excellent. And then you got Iggy Pop just being like...
Iggy Pop.
Yeah. You know, and you can hear James Brown influence like in Funhouse, the song itself.
Definitely. I mean, and had Power not had the technical issues that it had when it came to mixing and everything, I feel like that would have been... a better album, but man, Funhouse.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's my personal favorite out of that trilogy. But I still love Raw Power too, because Raw Power it's own thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, Funhouse, man, it's one of my favorites. It's
Campbell, you should remaster it.
Yeah, I'll do it.
The Campbell mix.
Sir, Mr. Pop, if you are listening to this, just send me the stems, or just mail the reel to reel to my house, 2221 Cross Trails. I'm not going to tell you the city, state, or zip code, but if you Google it, you might find it. Oh, no. Iggy Pop, send me the reel-to-reel.
He'll be waiting.
I'll be waiting.
I'll tag him in this.
Another one. We already covered animals.
My favorite Iggy story. Sorry.
No, you're good.
Back to the Henry Rollins podcast thing. He was talking about how, like, he saw Iggy Pop, and Iggy Pop, the first thing he does is come out on stage and, like, stage dives and, like, breaks his leg while he stage dives, and that's the end of the set. And everyone's just like, what just happened? But they were all strangely okay with it because it was, like, Iggy Pop.
It's Iggy Pop.
So they were, like, still blessed by Iggy Pop in those 3 seconds.
I'd be pissed because I love Iggy Pop so much.
He broke his leg.
Another one I got here is Space Ritual by Hawkwind, which I'm convinced is the best live album ever recorded.
You're wearing a Hawkwind shirt.
Right? This is the Space Ritual artwork.
You're wearing that at school? Nudity.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, there's a naked lady on.
There's boobs on your shirt. Is this allowed?
This is wildly inappropriate.
What the fuck? Is this allowed?
But I heard this album. I got big into Hawkwind probably my sophomore year of high school, and it's the defining space rock or whatever you want to call it.
Is that when you had long hair too?
I love
that. Would make sense that was your favorite band.
I love Hawkwind because it's
like a picture of your high school long hair with your glasses.
No, it's that was my image back then. And man, it's just if you want a mix of punk, psychedelic.
Well, that's like Motorhead and Acid, basically.
Yeah, but you had Lemmy Kilmister, mm-hmm. Probably around third album. And they made a live album called Space Ritual, and almost every song on there is better than the studio version. Because it's so heavy that the guitar is just so distorted, and there's all these wah-wah psychedelic effects, and then Lemmy is playing like power chords and more melodic bass lines than you're ever going to hear him play in Motorhead. Like, there's one song called Down.
Yeah, in Motorhead, he plays it more like a guitar.
Yeah, lots of chords, lots of distortion. Yeah. Here, he has distortion, but there's a lot more melodic now. It's like, there's
would
a song.
Did you say that influenced your bass
play? Oh, without a doubt. And he plays with a pick, too, and the way he plays is just so. There's a song called Lord of the Light. Well, for most songs, the bass guitar is mixed even louder than the guitar, which it really is a lead instrument in this case, but he's also playing very, very melodic. Like Down Through the Night, there's a really cool bass line. Without a doubt, without a doubt, it's changed my life, and it's just you really gotta this the stereotypical thing to say, but you gotta listen to it in one piece because it's like the way it happens is it flows so well, and then you also get these. All these spacey synthesizers. They had two guys on like noise generators and synthesizers, and then you get like spoken word in between by one of the singers, one of the many members of Hawkwind, Robert Calvert, doing like spoken word space, like all this trippy poetry in between. There's all these whoa, 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 you know, all these sound effects in the back, and then it'll just, kick into it. And the drums are just like firecracker blistering, and it's just amazing. I mean, it changed my life. Best live album I've ever heard, alongside an honorable mention, Live and Dangerous by Thin Lizzy.
I still haven't listened to Thin Lizzy. Thin
Lizzy is the cream of the crop dad rock.
It's the boys are back in town.
Yeah,
it's that one.
Why I haven't listened to it. Oh, my gosh. Well, Nathan has, like, a Thin Lizzy patch. I'm like, okay, if Nathan likes them, I can like
Live and Dangerous is a good one. It's like, the best kind of, like, you know, hell yeah kind of dad rock. But they're also, they have such good... Phil Lynott as a bass player, vocalist, amazing. That whole band was on fire. Then they had Gary Moore. Great blues. I'm not a big like blues rock guy, even though I listen to a lot of bands that are inspired by that stuff, but the way they do it right. And so good. And listen to the bass playing. Emerald is one of my favorite songs by Thin Lizzy. Next one. I've got, I'll throw a film in here. Repo Man. Repo
nice.
Man. Have you seen Repo Man?
Yeah.
For the record, this isn't just limited to music, so Jackson is a huge film person, so he obviously just included films.
I had to throw a few in there. Yeah, before I got into music, I was really big into movies and wanted to make them So Repo Man is basically, I can't describe it very well, but it is one of the most scatterbrained ADHD movies I've ever seen, because it's the general plot is that there is a car with a mysterious object in the trunk that that glows and can literally disintegrate people. And you don't really know exactly if it's an alien, if it's apparently it's a neutron bomb. I don't know. I can't remember exactly, but the whole movie centers around all these different people trying to find it, and sort of the main characters in focus are Emilio Estevez and Harry Dean Stanton in a repo company, and they're trying to get a hold of this car with the object in the trunk. And then not only are they trying to get it, like a ruthless kind of mafia type gang is trying to get it, televangelists are trying to get it, aliens, conspiracy theorists, everyone is trying to get this car. And the movie is just, the dialogue is so funny. It's just so vulgar and hilarious. And it's literally like someone with ADHD made it. And it's fantastic. It is probably my favorite film of all time.
And it's not to be confused, because there's two films called Repo Man.
Oh, there's one called Repo Men, and then there's Repo the Genetic Opera. Actually, there's another one, Repo Girl.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on. What? There's way more movies about Repo Men than I thought. The one that I'm thinking of came out in like 2000.
That's Repo Men. And a lot of people get it confused. Repo Man is 86 with Emilio Estevez.
Repo Men, it's where like basically for surgeries and stuff, you put down like a, like you can basically.
Organ donating, right?
No, like put down like a loan.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack, Black Flag, Circle Jerks, anyway.
But yeah,
that's very similar.
If I remember the premise right, it's that.
This is a blind card.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's.
Wait, have you seen Repo Man, though, too?
Yeah, I've seen both of them.
Awesome. Wait,
because I originally thought Repo Men was a remake. Which.
Is that right?
No. Or that might be Repo Men. I don't know.
No, that's a wrestler.
Oh, you fucker.
You found the wrong guy.
This ain't
There's
it, chief.
There's a wrestler called Repo. I didn't know that.
There's a wrestler called everything. There's probably a wrestler called Circle Jerk, and it's four guys.
Oh, that's bad.
We're gonna have to put a hard E for explicit on this one.
Kids, you're gonna want to close your ears. But what you're saying though about
Repo Men. So, as far as I know, it is basically for organ donating or whatever.
Oh, 2010. This one?
Yeah. So like, you can. Oh, I'm trying to remember how it went. I don't know if it's like if you couldn't pay for it or something, they could possess the organ that they gave you. She was ridiculous.
It sounds hilarious and horrifying, like simultaneously.
Yeah, but it took itself way too seriously. It wasn't good. Don't watch it. But Repo Man with Emilio Estevez and a glowing car. Watch it. Don't watch that movie though.
Yeah. Because I think you'd really like Repo Man.
The one that you were doing.
Yeah, great soundtrack. I love the characters and subplots are what make Repo Man so great. And I love Harry Dean Stanton. Harry Dean Stanton's my favorite actor.
Sorry,
he's been in a bunch of other movies. You might know him from Alien, and I know he was in another good movie. I need to see it. It's called Wise Blood with Brad Dourif, who plays Chucky and was in When He Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's Billy Babbitt. Yeah. Anyway, that's another story. Back to music. Double Nickels on the Dime by the Minutemen. This is one of the best records. I think it's one of the best records and most creative of the 80s, because the Minutemen are just a fusion of all these different crazy genres, like put in this blender. And, you know, there's funk, there's like.
Mike Watt's bass playing is.
Oh,
no
he's
one,
Mike.
I don't know
Watt.
Anyone else who plays.
It's Mike Watt.
Yeah. He's
Mike Watt.
What? Mike Watt.
That's bad.
I said Captain. I said what? You know what I'm talking about? Okay.
Captain.
Yeah. Okay. It is hip hop song. But no, man. Jeez. Mike Watt. All they're playing is like jazz, funk, blues, punk, of course. Just all in this zany, wacky format. You know, because 1 minute they'll make that like this like jazzy type of Latin kind of feel, and like shrieking dissonant guitar, and then they'll go into like a pop song. It like, yeah. sounds like something Wire would have made. And then they'll go back into madness. And just the three of them, George Hurley, Mike Watt, and D Boone, are one of the, it's probably my favorite trio of musicians of all time. I consider them to be as good as other power trios like The Police and Rush and stuff like that, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were just three, too.
Yeah.
Oh, three piece.
Sorry. Yeah. Like Grand Funk Railroad's another good example. But, man.
Grand Funk Railroad.
The early stuff. Early stuff. I ain't talking about no damn Locomotion. I hate that song. That ain't my Grand Funk. But, no, the Minutemen, Double Nickels on the Dime, it's literally like maybe an hour, 40 minutes of literally like 45 songs because they... Literally, like, they're like the longest song in that album is like 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And you got songs like.
My favorite, like, picture of you is the one when you're with Mike Watt.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of blurry and you're, like, bursting with joy. And he's
that was
like...
That's one of the few times I've fangirled over. Mike Watt is one of my musical heroes. I mean, really.
It's great to see live.
A humble musician, cares about his music, and man, he's a strange bass player. Like, him.
Him and Kira. Ugh.
Yeah, Kyra, or Kira.
Is it Kira?
It might be Kyra, it might be Kira.
Okay.
Anyway, she's another great bass player around Black Flag, like 1982, 83, I can't remember. Maybe 84. Anywho, but Double Nickels and the Dime, lots of different fusions of genres. They pissed off the punk rock scene because they weren't punk enough, because they were actually, you know, they were great musicians, and they liked punk, but they also wanted to experiment, not just do rock-based music. And, you know, people would spit on them. They literally got, like, gum and condoms thrown on them and stuff. And they kept playing. And they toured, like, Black Flag. After Black Flag saw their first show, or the first show that Black Flag saw them do, Greg Ginn, the guitarist of Black Flag, signed them up on SST. And the Minutemen and Black Flag, like, toured around Europe and stuff in a van together.
Great to see.
No, oh, I bet it would be. Them and Husker Du. And yeah, Double Nickels and the Dime is just an onslaught of music. And there's a few songs that aren't that great, but they are redeemed by like 20 other hilarious, wacky, and great songs. Anywho, moving on, I'll go to another film. Sling Blade. This movie gets me teary-eyed almost every time I watch it. And no one seems to be as emotionally affected by it if I watch it with them. And I'm not just saying that, but like, I'm one of the few people I know that always gets teary-eyed every time I watch that movie. And basically, long story short, the film is about a mentally challenged man who gets out of the mental asylum, and he's set free because he killed his mother long ago because, you know, I guess she was, she cheated on her husband, and, you know, like, the mentally ill man, Carl Childers, was abused as a child. He was left out in the shed, so it kind of just festered and he killed his mother. Well, he gets out and he befriends a young boy by the name of Frank. Well, Frank takes him into his home and they don't see Carl as a threat because Carl cares about this young boy and sort of is a father figure because Frank, the young boy, his father unfortunately killed himself, and it's a single mother, but unfortunately the single mother taking care of the young boy Frank, she lets Carl into the house, and Carl becomes just they take care of him, and he, you know, gets a, you know, part-time job or whatever. You know, he's fairly high-functioning as a mentally ill person. But things start to get sketchy when the single mother, she's not single, but she's dating this really piece of crap, abusive, drunk boyfriend played by country singer Dwight Yoakam.
Oh.
I should also say this. Billy Bob Thornton directed, wrote, and starred as Carl Childers in this movie. This is the French fried potato, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so things start to get intense, and Carl realizes that he has to save this boy and the mother, who he both loves very much, from this drunken and abusive man. Extremely emotional. The soundtrack is great, and it's like this crazy ambient, noisy guitar stuff. It's just beautiful. Look up the soundtrack, too. I mean, every time I watch that movie, I'm almost moved to tears.
What'd you say that movie was called?
Sling Blade.
Sling Blade.
Yeah, French
Rat. Mm-hmm. I reckon French Rat Potatoes.
Billy Bob Thornton, classic. And then he made Bad Santa, which is a completely different film.
Bad Santa.
Yeah.
Existed.
very wonchy.
All right, where are we at now? Okay, the next one. Deceit by This Heat.
Oh, that's such a good album.
It is. It changed. It's another one that changed my life. My friend Chase Hampton, who goes to this school, he got me into, you know, krautrock, can, stuff like that, all that good stuff. And he showed me This Heat. He showed me a song called Makeshift Swahili. And I said, this is literal insanity. I haven't heard anything. Because I'd heard post-punk. I had heard Minutemen, you know, Wire, stuff like that. But the way this was done was just so strange. And Deceit as a whole, the fact that it was made in the, like, 1980, 81 is insanity. It is, I think it's one of the most, like, ambitious, and it's, you know, they'll be very long songs, but they aren't, like you said about Animal, they don't fatigue. And the choices of instruments, the way it's produced, how lo-fi it is in certain sections, the songwriting, the singing and drumming of Charles Hayward, as well as, I always blank out on the other, Charles Bullen and, I can't think of the other names. Anywho, they're also one of the best three pieces of all time. And it's like this avant-garde, experimental, you know, post-punk, you know, there's elements of reggae, krautrock. It's insane. It really is. I mean, it's, that is probably my top five albums of all time. And it changed my life. Like, it really made me think about music differently, like that, and which I'll be getting to next, Can. It blew my mind. It's absolute insanity. And their debut is good, too. Their Peel sessions are great, as most Peel sessions are. Their EP, Health and Efficiency, is great, too. Phenomenal band. Absolutely phenomenal. Let's see. I'll be wrapping it up here pretty soon. I'll name two ones really quick. I'd say Future Days, Can.
Yeah.
Not much else can be said about Can. They're one of the most important German bands, one of the most important bands, in my opinion, one of my favorites. They combine, just like This Heat, they combine a bunch of different elements together, and it's almost insulting trying to give them one category, because they're like this, some of the parts, they all like different music and had different ways of doing stuff and just played and edited stuff together until they got what they wanted. And yeah, there's no one else that sounds like them, you know, just like Minutemen and This Heat, you know, they have their own stamp on music and inspired Public Image Limited, you know, LCD Sound System. I know everyone says that, but those guys love Can, you know, and then the Marquis Smith from The Fall. Anywho, another one. I mean,
Kanye sampled Can.
Yeah, Sing Swan Song, and then changed it to Drunken Hot Girls, which is still really cool. That's cool that it's old Kanye has listened to Can. But yeah, Can. I love them. Absolutely love them. And I'm sure these guys do too. The next one, moving from avant-garde experimental music to more traditional American rock blues-based stuff.
Is it
Creedence?
Yeah,
Creedence. Creedence?
CCR is one of my favorite.
Jackson, you're out. Get out.
Hey.
You're off of this podcast. You're banned.
You have 30 seconds to explain why Creedence is good.
Oh, they changed my life. They're not only is John Fogerty an excellent songwriter, singer, and guitar player, but the feelings I get from CCR.
Working for the man every night and day.
I was thinking about whether or not I wanted to do that impression or not. Thank you for doing it, though.
The thing about them is, and yes, they're very rock and blues based, and you know, well, you know, whatever. But they had their own stamp as well on sound, because no one sounds like John Fogerty. No one plays like he does, or it has that exact fuzziness and just a feel to it.
No one sounds like.
Yeah. It's their own thing, you know? And they also had Stu Cook on bass, great bass player, and Doug Clifford on drum, excellent drummer. And Willie and the Poor Boys, it was that or Cosmos Factory. I'll just say those two albums together is kind of a bonus thing. They were both important albums for me, and very emotional albums, too. That is a band that there's a lot of ballads that bore me, but when they make a ballad, I just get teary-eyed. Because a lot of that stuff stems from childhood, you know, because On Willie and the Poor Boys, you have, of course, Fortunate Son. You have a song called Effigy, which is very underrated. You have Down in the Corner, of course. And then you have, really sad.
Down on the Corner.
Yeah. It's just, you can hear it in your head. But then there's also,
they had hits. Like, they were great.
Yeah, they had so many hits. And their deep tracks are great, too. There's Don't Look Now, which the Minutemen actually covered. And that song's got some really, that's one of the better, like, politically motivated songs that I really like, and I'm like really like, man, that's just sad, you know. That's just, I mean, it's just, it really is music that speaks to me and speaks to my soul. And I'm very picky about a lot of some of the old dad rock and blues bands. I mean, some of them aged well and some of them didn't. But CCR will always remain a favorite band with me.
Isn't that like your dad's favorite band too?
No, like, he likes ABBA the best.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I love ABBA too because they have another special DNA. But I listened to CCR when I was a little boy. I'm convinced "We'll Stop the Rain" is one of the best songs of all time.
You mean
ABBA?
Sorry, Jackson.
No, you're good. But I had that childhood nostalgia of Creedence because that's one of the first bands I ever heard. And then I came back in college. And I like started listening to their full albums, man. Green River, Bayou County, Willie and the Poor Boys, Cosmos Factory, all solid albums.
See, at least your parents liked Creedence. My parents liked Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Lynyrd Skynyrd has a few good songs.
They got Freebird.
See, I like Simple Man the best.
Oh no.
I had to sing that for my fucking I had to sing that for my fucking baccalaureate thing for graduation. One of my teachers was like, "Hey, will you sing Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd?" And I said, "God damn it, I live in Bethany, Oklahoma."
One of the shows I was working at, you guys were playing, and your encore was fucking Freebird. And lost it. I was so
proud. Yeah, that just in their back pocket prepared.
I know.
So we've practiced that once, and it was in 2016 when we first started as a band, as a joke, and then we just started doing that if people requested, because when people request Freebird at a show, no one actually plays it.
Yeah.
And we said, fuck you, we're playing it, but we just play the first verse and then go straight to the solo, because that's what people want to hear.
Yeah, y'all pulled that at VZD's, and that was a good time.
Jeez.
It was something.
I think we've done that like 5 times.
Yeah.
Ever.
Sorry, I'm like lost what I was going to say.
CCR, we were talking about
CCR, Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Back on this topic, CCR, childhood band, and a band I think for what they did was revolutionary in their own way and has their own stamp. Total sad boy music for me. I get so teary-eyed when I listen to that. Something about it is just so strong with me. And
the CCR is strong with this one.
The Creedence is strong.
Yeah, I have a hot wife. Yeah, I listen to CCR. Hell
stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Too far.
I guess I'll get to my last selection here. And this is a completely different kind of nostalgia because it's going to sound so pretentious, but this might be my favorite album of all time is Geogatti by Boards of Canada. And this is the type of nostalgia is like it's like something I'd always wanted to hear, but I had never heard it until maybe a year ago. Mm-hmm. And Chase got me into Boards of Canada. He showed me music as you write to children. And then I finally listened to Beautiful Place Out in the Country. And that was phenomenal as well as music as a right. But something about Geogatti and the way it starts out and the tones, and the sampling, the beats, everything about that album literally feels euphoric to listen to. And it sounds super cheesy, but like if you have a good set of headphones, there are certain types of music that literally feel like a massage.
Oh yeah,
going from your brain to your dope smokers like that because the frequency is so fat. Brian Eno, Aphex Twin. Cluster, you know, at times, you know, can. And, you know, there's plenty of music I listen to that I love, but not all of it gives me that massage on my brain feeling, you know. But the way this is produced, the certain sounds they get are so handpicked and so, you know, because they, you know, Chase was telling me they use like old tape machines that were broken and warped to get those sounds. So, you know, people trying to recreate it, they can get close, but you know, they'll never get exactly what's on that record. And the song, like the transitioning of songs and just the overall, you know, gloomy feeling of that album is just so, I've never heard anything else like it. I really haven't. That's another group that has its stamp on music. And for me, they're very inspirational to my work because they rely heavily on atmosphere and creating very vivid imagery.
It creates a world almost.
Oh, absolutely. It's because a lot of people have picked up their feeling, like their references to like childhood or, you know, like conspiracies and stuff like that, you know, two very random things, but you can hear that in their music, you know, because they talk about like Branch Davidian, Waco Siege, stuff like that. And then there's often elements of childhood and the innocence of childhood, like music has a right to children. You'll hear kids talking and then laughing. And then there's another song I did where it's the opening part is a sample of either it was them or somebody else asking kids what they think God is. And each has a different answer on what they think God is. And it's just this really ambient piece kind of soft in the background with their voices going over it. And they, not only that, but the tones they select sound like something that brings you back to a certain place. And it's such a strange feeling. That's another band I get very emotional with when I listen to, you know, and the fan base they're very, very, you know, it's kind of like the Tool fan base, you know, a lot of people are kind of like, you know, even with that, I mean, I love that group. I really do, you know, and, guys, you made it are fascinating. There's two dudes from Scotland, not Canada, who have a love for like old nostalgic stuff and creating certain atmospheres so well with synthesizers, drum machines, loops, all sorts of really cool stuff. There's elements of hip hop at times with the beats. There's, you know, just the way they sample stuff and alter stuff. You don't even know what the origin of what something was. And that is where their true gift lies, that in the tones they create, you know.
Well, and it's such a layered sound. It's almost like you don't know. It's almost like this just came out as music. It's not like a bunch of sounds put together. It's one thing. Mm. And I think that's, at its core, that's what music is supposed to be. Like, you know, it's supposed to be like, okay, here's music.
You kind of like, it's weird because the more I listen to it, I notice something new every time I listen to it. And that, you know, and there's a lot of other albums that are like that too, where I'll have not listened to a rhythm guitar part or have caught the bass line doing something cool or whatever. With these guys, I'll just wonder, like, some of the beats, and this is probably just because I'm not the most competent at, like, defining something exactly. But some people could immediately pick out chords and minor, major, all that stuff immediately diminished, whatever beat. These guys, I'll listen to something and I'll hear the beat and I'll be like, okay, I just now understand kind of like what the rhythm is. I mean, there's a song on Gio Gatti where it literally sounds like locust wings flapping or some kind of bug.
Yeah.
And it's insane. And then, you know, the opening thing sounds like it makes me think of like the sun rising or like eggs being fried or something. And it just has this, so good. So fucking good. I could go on and on about it and just sound like a total dweeb.
Yeah.
But that album, that might be my favorite album as of right now of all time. You know, and it's got a special place in my heart. Get very emotional about it. Anywho, that's enough of my blabbering.
Metal Pill?
Oh, Metal Box. Important post-punk record. I'm sorry I didn't mention it.
Right?
Okay. It was what they were originally going to release is a bunch of singles, but the record company, I think, wanted them to release it all. And, you know, they decided, you know, they thought it would be pretty funny to do the Metal Box. And then after the Metal Boxes, which were the limited edition 10 cylinders, after those sold out, or not cylinders, sorry. After those sold out, they released the same album, same song list, everything as second edition. Those are the same album.
Okay, because you had mentioned that and I grew up with Pels, but I was like, I don't know that. I haven't heard that album.
Mm-hmm. I was like confused about it at first. I still call it Metal Box, but that's just the man, that album, that's, you want to talk about an album that influenced me as a musician, that made me, you know, realize that you don't have to be, you know, as much as I love people like Chris Squire, Geddy Lee, you know, have respect for Jocko, people like that, you don't have to have the most complex bass lines. You can hammer that stuff over and over with several variations and repetitions, and it can be so groovy. Yeah.
Locking in with the groove.
And it just, you know, it kind of has the role that disco does with, you know.
It was like, I mean, I described Hell as kind of being like dissonant disco or like disco.
Even. Yeah. Or, yeah. Yeah. There's a song they have called Death Disco. Yeah. You know, it's
and
like.
And like Fodler Stomp.
Yeah, fodder. Yeah, that's
fodder? Is it fodder or fodler?
Fodder.
Fodder. Okay.
Fodler might be.
I thought it was fodler.
That'd be funny if it was fodler. But they are a jam band, you know, and not all their stuff is great. But what I'd say I love most of their early stuff, and then some of the later stuff is good too. Because as much as people kind of disown the later poppy pill stuff that John Lydon did, he still did what he wanted and took a risk. And that in itself is as punk as fuck. You know, just like the Man to Man, you know, he did what he wanted. You know, he did poppy stuff, you know, This Is Not a Love Song, you know, and then his new album has like, you know there's still elements of dub. John loves reggae. Ja Wobble loved reggae, and Keith Levine liked like prog and was a roadie for Yes. So, I mean, thank God for, you know, because the whole, not dissing on your love of the, never mind the box, but part of what, you know, John Lydon liked the Sex Pistols, but part of the reason Pill was created is he got tired of the other band members just talking about fashion and not really talking about the music. So he's like, well, fuck this. And then he, you know,
well, I mean, Sid public Vicious was addicted to heroin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. There's, it's kind of like the Courtney Love, Kurt, you know, there's like, you know, did he kill her, did he not? You know, the whole, and those two very different, but anyway, that's another story. But Pill, another very honorable mention. I'll give some other honorable mentions real quick. Frankenchrist, Dead Kennedys. Oh, yeah. One of the best punk bands, top favorite punk bands. Hold on. Down to Earth by Nectar, Noi 1, Cluster 2. I'm not even making that up.
There's so many bands.
Volume 1. It was Black Sabbath Volume 4, like, not to copy Campbell, but that is a great record as well. Master of Reality.
Volume 1, Volume 2.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I'm going to list a few more and then I'll be done.
Montana 2.
No, you're thinking of 7. sorry, not my strongest bit. I lost my place. Talking Heads, More Songs About Buildings.
Fuck, I forgot Talking Heads.
How could you forget Talking Heads?
More Songs About Buildings and Food, Remain in Light.
Is it still recording? Okay, cool.
We'll do a 50 album extravaganza, and I'm sure Talking
maybe
Heads
someday
will be on there. I thought of these in less than 24 hours, so.
Same. I probably thought of them in 30 minutes. Oh, man. I'll name just a few more. I'm sorry I'm taking so long.
No, you're good.
Half Machine, Lip Moves. Thank you, Chase. Chrome, Take Omega by Can, another Can album.
I'm surprised you didn't list that as your favorite.
Oh, it's a great album, but I feel like...
Defend Future Days right now.
Okay. The thing I like about Future Days is just... Oh, man. It's not as diverse as Take Omega, but just something about it is just like...
Unacceptable. Keep going.
It's
time's up.
Before I really knew what dream pop was, I thought that's what it was, because Future Days is the most relaxing, like waterbed song. You know,
a good way to describe it.
It literally feels like you could just be floating in
river. It feels like you're laying on a waterbed and someone kind of just like punched the end of the waterbed and you're just like.
Yeah, it's fun.
Like an octopus dance.
It's a fun. It's very tranquil.
It's a tranquil album.
Tranquil and very serene. And
that's funny.
It's very atmospheric. And Take Omega is like pure jam, funky collage, kind of Burroughs cut up method in some parts.
Yeah.
Anywho, well, that's.
You defended it enough, I guess.
We'll leave
you're
it at
a real
that.
Musician, I guess.
Yeah, maybe next time try listening to Radiohead, dumbass.
You ever heard of Kid A?
I listen to Kid Rock.
Oh, is that the least is that know the branding on? Kid Rock.
Fun fact, Kid Rock sampled Butthole Surfers. Yep. What, you knew that?
I knew that.
Son of a bitch. Can't stoop him. Or stump him. Whatever the word is. Can't dump him.
Can't dump on me.
Oh, I think that concludes this episode. Do you guys want to give out your Instagrams, Facebooks?
I'm CampbellYoung14 on everything because I made all my social media when I was 14. It made sense at the time. Campbell is spelled CAMPBELL because that's the way the soup spelled it.
Were you named after the soup?
No, I was named after my mom's maiden name.
Jackson Dennis Fritz.
Yeah.
Dennis.
Dennis.
I could go on and on about my middle name. Everyone makes fun of it.
When you first told
get the,
me.
Get
Jackson Dennis the Menace Fritz.
It's always that. It's always, you know, like Dennis the Menace?
Yes, yes. Or like a wrestler name.
It sounds like a Poindexter library assistant. Anywho.
You just told me I looked you straight in the face and just blurted
out. Everyone has. I'm not offended. I'm just used to it by now.
Yeah. It's just so like, what?
It is normal. It is a very white guy name.
Dennis.
Yeah, that or Charles. Mine is chameleonfactory.bandcamp.com and then Facebook, I guess, /chameleonfactory.
You look like SpongeBob in that one episode.
Bro, nice Ray-Bans.
Thanks, bro.
You can't see it, but Camel's
he's wearing his headphones.
Being a little naughty.
And so is that how we're concluding this?
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Bye-bye.